I'm Caleb Brown, host of the Cato Daily Podcast, and I'm taking this time to ask you during the month of December to financially support the Cato Daily Podcast and the broad mission of the Cato Institute to advance individual liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Visit cato.org/podcast sponsor and support our efforts. This is the only time of the year when I make this request, so I'm adding something. If you support Cato to the tune of $1,000 or more, I'll gladly give you a shout-out on the podcast, or you can designate another individual to receive the benefits of that donation. Just visit cato.org/podcast sponsor to get started, and thank you. This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, December 27th, 2021. I'm Caleb Brown. In order to reestablish the separation of powers among branches of government, every branch needs to perform its basic, clear functions. Daniel Du of the Pacific Legal Foundation says that means making sure that we understand what the branches of government should and shouldn't do, and set strategies to put every branch back in its lane.
We have seen sort of, I think, the beginnings of a chipping away at the regulatory state in at the Supreme Court, at least, with regard to the deference that lawmakers are able to, or lawmakers some, in many cases, prefer to give to administrative agencies. And we have a case now before the U.S. Supreme Court about whether delegations, certain kinds of delegations, are constitutional at all. So when we think more substantially about regulatory form as reform as a legislative matter, what's the prize? What do we need to keep our eyes on?
Yeah, I think that when it comes to regulatory reform and all of the power that legislatures have abdicated to the executive branch, it's not just the legislative branch that's done this. So we have to look at each branch of government and reform how they operate in the regulatory space. Regulations have the force and effect of law. They can take away your liberty. They can take away your property. And so we want to make sure that each branch is still performing its proper function. So we need meaningful legislative oversight over regulations. We need executive accountability. It's the governor or the president's administration that's putting these regulations forward. So making sure that somebody who's politically accountable to the people signs off on those things. And then finally, when it comes to the courts, making sure that they don't have their thumb on the scale of justice in favor of one party, especially when that party is the government.
Having heard that, those bullets laid out, seems like we're batting maybe 0-for-3.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's part of the problem. I do think that we have an opportunity. You know, over the last 18 months, we've lived in a world without a separation of powers. We've seen what happens when power is concentrated in one person. And usually when we have this lack of separation of powers and it's just overregulation, it destroys one person at a time, one business at a time, or maybe even one industry. But we as a collective got to see what happens when power goes to one person. And we don't like it. We don't like it when one person can decide which healthcare we can receive, which businesses are essential, and so forth.
Taking these in turn, what would robust legislative oversight look like? I know that, you know, people have heard me say this before. In Congress, you have workhorses and show horses, and it seems like so many people in Congress want to be show horses and not workhorses and do that sort of basic oversight. So what does a more robust legislative oversight look like?
It can come in a lot of different forms. So it could be a sunrise review where legislators have to look at any new regulations. You could have a sunset review where they look at regulations so often to make sure that they're still needed. You can also look at certain regulations. So at the federal level, there's been a bill that's been pending for over a decade now, I think, the RAINS Act, where if there was something that was a major bill, a major regulation that impacts more than $100 million, then it would have to be approved by Congress in order to go into effect. And that makes sense because it impacts so much of the economy and so much of a particular industry.
And it puts the onus back on Congress when it comes to creating rules that have the effect of law.
Absolutely. We want, when things have the effect of law, it should go through the lawmaking process. It should go through Congress. It should be signed by the president or the governor or the executive in charge.
It seems like there is a, you know, to the extent that we're doing sunset review, which to me should imply that rules sunset.
It does.
Right? But rules don't sunset, or too often they don't sunset. And what about putting a time limit on all these rules and saying, hey, Congress, you want to keep this rule? You go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And it depends, right? So this is an issue not just at the federal level, but also at the state level. And you do have some states. So for example, Idaho recently did away with a ton of very burdensome regulations. And the way that that happened is their regulations do expire every year. And then the legislature has to approve them over again. And there was a time when they weren't able to get to that. And so all of the regulations expired. And they had a proactive governor who was regulatory reform minded and basically just implemented some regulations on an emergency basis, but told all of the agencies, come back to me and justify the regulations and just don't even come back with the ones that are no longer needed. And they were able to cut a huge percentage of their administrative code that way.
And given the way that Congress likes to wait until the last minute to do a lot of things, that seems like a good idea for the federal level. That is, if you don't get to it, people don't have to live under these rules anymore.
Darn, too bad, right? That would just be tough.
Okay, so with respect to the executive branch, what reforms need to be made there?
Sure. So making sure that somebody who is politically accountable signs off on final rules and regulations. So at the federal level, we think that it should be somebody who is at least presidentially appointed and Senate confirmed, somebody who goes through that process. Pacific Legal Foundation did a report years ago that looked at FDA regulations, found out that 98% of them over a 17-year period were unconstitutionally signed off by career bureaucrats, not anybody who was politically accountable in any way.
And who wrote that report for PLF?
Angela Erickson, who is nice just lady. Our fantastic strategic research director.
She's a nice lady.
She is such a nice lady. I like her a lot. Probably not as much as you like her, but she's great.
Yeah. So the issue of whether or not who signs off, people signing off on these rules, one of the problems that was longstanding was people signing off on rules were not confirmed by the Senate. They did not have the imprimatur of the legislative branch of the government. And I have a lot of sympathy for the idea that somebody with that sign-off from the Senate ought to be responsible for these. But how does that really move the needle?
I think it could, because at least at that point, you could say that if there's a bad regulation, if there's a harmful regulation, that, you know, this president's administration is responsible for it. There's no passing the buck. Or if we have a good administration that wants to undo regulations, it's another arrow in their quiver, right? It's another way that they can stop bad regulations from going into effect, rather than the agencies being this black box where regulations just appear.
As I mentioned at the outset, we've seen a little chipping away of the regulatory state within the judicial branch, and that has been courts sort of hamstringing this deference that courts have long given to administrative agencies to say, hey, you get to interpret statutes in the most, you know, reasonable way that you can, and you can interpret your own regulations in the way that you see fit. And that gives, depending on the partisanship of who's in the White House, that can give administrative agencies a massive amount of power. But again, we've seen that chipped away. But what else needs to happen from the legislature, from the Congress, in order to really put that to give courts? I don't know what you would say, more muscle behind the idea that regulations need to fit a certain mold.
Yeah, I think you're right. Courts are starting to see the error of this, just how insane it is where courts have abdicated this, their responsibility to interpret the law to the agencies that are parties in the case. So I think that one way that the legislature, either state or Congress, can step in is by passing a law that says that when these issues arise, that courts should look at them de novo or anew. They're not going to put their thumbs on the scale of justice in one way or another. And we think that it should go even further by having sort of a regulatory rule of lenity, meaning that if there's any remaining ambiguity, that it's interpreted in favor of a presumption of liberty or against government power. That makes sense. What in every other aspect of law, if there's an ambiguous provision, it's interpreted against the person who drafted it. If you and I enter into a contract and I write an ambiguous provision and you sue me on it, you shouldn't be penalized because I wrote something ambiguous. And we do that in criminal law because we don't think people should go to prison because they couldn't understand what the law prohibited. So when it comes to these administrative proceedings, we flip that on its head. And right now, when courts are giving deference to these agencies, if there's something ambiguous, they just say, government agency, you win.
Right. And people don't really understand the degree to which agencies will try to give courts the runaround in order to maintain their authority, to maintain a sense of secrecy over how they are interpreting their own regulations. And that leaves the regulated sort of in the lurch.
Right. I mean, what are we incentivizing? It incentivizes ambiguous statutes and ambiguous regulations.
Which, to be clear, Congress loves ambiguous statutes because they get to wag their finger at the agencies when they, quote unquote, overstep.
Oh, right. Well, and not only that, but in the first place, they get to vote for these great laws with these platitudes that sound great. Clean Water Act, you know, EPA, make sure that we have clean water. And then the EPA says, great, we're going to regulate everything from navigable waters down to puddles. And we're going to have all these onerous regulations impacting everybody.
So if we're batting 0 for 3 right now, or maybe 1/2 for 3, what likelihood do you put on there being a big change here? Does something dramatic have to happen? Was COVID dramatic enough for us to really recognize the problems that we're having within regulation?
I think that the federal government led the states here. And I think that it's the states that are going to lead us out of it. We have a number of states who are stepping up and implementing these types of reforms, all three types of reforms. And they're really leading the way. And those states are doing really well. They're prospering. Whereas I think that we have hope in the courts for the federal courts to undo Chevron deference. But the other two, we'll see. There is a bill right now that has bipartisan support that would require final regulations to be signed off by presidentially appointed, Senate-confirmed people. So I think that there is a growing understanding the importance of the separation of powers and the genius that is in our Constitution, that those things ensure liberty.
Daniel Du directs legal policy for the Pacific Legal Foundation. It's the final week of our push to make you, podcast listener, a podcast sponsor. Visit cato.org/podcast sponsor to get started. And thank you.